Dessa is a rapper, singer, and writer that NPR World Cafe called one of the most anomalous artists in music today. She's headlining Project North this Saturday. Project North is a two-day music, arts, and sustainability festival hosted by WXPR and ArtStart in downtown Rhinelander. For WXPR's Off the Record, Katie Thorson spoke with Dessa ahead of her performance.
But starting off, I do want to talk about your latest album, Bury the Lead. It's very, fun. I think Hurricane Party especially kind of encapsulates that. But I was just curious what your inspiration for either that song or this album was.
Yeah, I think that song is probably the most representative of the driving ideas behind the record, in that it was written as the pandemic was coming to a close, but still in everybody's minds. And just a really rough time to be a human being on Earth, for all of us socially. What heartbreaking societal news constantly. Really scary as an organism. And while a lot of my music is melancholic, it felt like the sad parts of being alive were being so well publicized on every side that I was eager to write something that leaned into the not so sad parts, So, hey, even if threat and danger is everywhere on the horizon, there's something to be said and celebrated about surviving so far.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. And I did get this chance to see you at Big Top Chautauqua this summer, and you have such a fun energy, when you're doing shows and stuff like that.
Thanks.
That was so great. But I did also want to ask you, you shared the poem you wrote, I think it was called Crowd Surfing, which I also think was related, you had written during the pandemic as kind of not knowing what comes next kind of thing. And I guess, now that we are past that and performances are happening again, I mean, how's that feel to be back out there and doing that again?
Yeah, it feels exciting to be able to connect with people again. But I think like a lot of people, it's funny how quickly we acclimate to what we understand to be normal. And yeah, probably fail to be quite as grateful as we should, right? Like now that we're back to normal, when was the last time we left the house and we're like, oh my God, what a glorious thing that I don't need a mask, or that I can say hello to the person who annoys me at the water cooler instead of worrying about if they're still alive on Zoom. So I think it feels good to re-enter traffic. And also I would be well served to remind myself how tentative and tenuous it all is. And you brought up the song Hurricane Party before. Like the phenomenon of Hurricane Party is something that happens in the southern US and maybe in a lot of the Caribbean too. But when a really big hurricane is coming, people will batten the hatches, get together at somebody's house, buy a bunch of booze, turn on the radio, and set about trying to stay alive, while the bad one passes over. And so that was the thinking of a lot of my work, I think, during that time. It was like, okay, we're all living sort of in a social bunker of some sorts. How do you make that living feel like life?
And in a lot of your music, I could hear, your poetry and your slam poetry background. And I was curious for you if, is there a difference for you between poetry and rap, and where is that line if it exists?
Yeah, my ideas on this have changed in the past few years. I think early in my career, it was exciting to hear people talk about rap as if it warranted all of the care that poetry merits. So when rap started being evaluated in academia and fancy people on the radio were talking about the merit of lyrics. And then I remember hearing someone who I'm afraid I can't remember who say, rap doesn't need to be considered poetry to be culturally valuable, right? Like, we don't need to elevate, air quotes, rap to poetry, because rap's rap, And I think there's something to that too, right? So the idea that they're related forms for sure, but I think some poems would go too quickly in oral presentation to be appreciated at absolute full strength. Eating an entire cake as fast as you can, you miss something of it. On the other hand, I think there are so many moving poems, excuse me, moving like spoken word poems and songs where when you read those lyrics on the page, they don't do it the same, particularly because I think music relies on like refrains, the word same words are being said. So much of that depends on how you say it, right? So saying like, yo, I used to love you. It's like, I used to love you. To I used to love you. Like all that hits different, and that looks exactly the same on the page, except for maybe you could toss an italic in and hope that that
Yeah.
infuses it with all the varied inflections of meaning that a voice does. And you can't do that. You got like 13 punctuation signs, and we have almost a limitless range of colors in our intonation. So I think they're close cousins, kissing cousins, but different.
Can I ask too, I guess, what is your process then when you are doing music? Is it do you hear, a beat or a song and then you're like, oh, this can inspire this lyric, or do you have lyrics in your head and like, oh, I need music to this?
Yeah, I would say 90%, 80, 90% of the time, I'll get a beat. So, a scrap of like pretty polished production from one of my partners. Very often that's Laserbeak, also a member of Doomtree. And I'll hear it and go, ooh, there, I could ride this, like I could do this one, which is slightly different than I like this one. There's some beats that I'm like, ah, this is so dope. I would have no blessed idea. Like, I don't know how to get in. You know what I mean? It's like, I don't know. It's like walking by a house that you don't know where the door is, but it's beautiful. And then there's some beats that I'm like, oh, this I got. I could figure out how to scale this thing. So then I'll call Beak and say, like, please don't give that to any other rappers. That was mine. And then I'll write lyrics and then we'll pop into like a a home studio with our third collaborator, Andy Thompson, and we'll kind of deconstruct it. Okay. I got a plan now, right? So let's strip it way back for the bridge. Andy, could you add some new chords? So this sounds hella songy. A lot of the stuff I do, I would say is like 70% rap lyrics and other, and then big harmonies and kind of more pop or R&B sounds. The other 10 to 20% of the time, I'll have an idea lyrically and I'll sit at my Casio piano that I play at the level of like a very dedicated and not super talented 9-year-old child and try to bang something out, that and I can. It takes a lot of practice and I can, and then I'll put that in the hands of somebody who's a little bit more proficient at the keys. But I really like writing that way too. I think in the beginning, the roles of rapper and producer were pretty distinct. Some people did both of those roles, but they were very distinct. And the first time I wrote a song on piano, oh my God, I was just like I had made my own Girl Scout troop and given myself all the badges. I was very, very proud. So I like working
That's a
that way too.
huge thing, though. You should be for that,
It felt huge. I think also because, to be honest, like it was, I got to show the peers, all of the producers that I've worked with, I think without exception, maybe with one exception, are dudes, which is a drag in that it's a very uneven gender populated role. But I got to show the dudes who I considered so talented. Look, you know what I mean? It was like the kid who makes the macaroni noodle card on Mother's Day or something held water. Like this was good. This was worthwhile. And I was so excited to sort of in those moments count myself amongst their ranks. Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
And obviously we've mentioned music and your poetry, but I feel like your creative projects have no end. You write, you do your podcast, you do so much. I mean, what drives you to kind of go through all these different mediums?
I think the answer that I'm going to give today is like different than the answer I've given before because I'm in that part of I'm uncertain about what to do next. And I know that when this happens, usually I find a life raft and then I start and then I get excited and then you start kicking to like some distant unknown shore. But before that happens and you're just in the ocean bobbing all alone, it feels like my hands are clenching as I'm talking to you. It's an anxiety inducing feeling. So I think at my best, I'm driven and curious and at my worst, I'm hella anxious that I don't have something to be driving towards. I'm not a person who feels kind of naturally content in stillness. And so, yeah, some of it is probably an outlet for that anxious energy. I'm like a pretty dang down the line atheist. So in a lot of ways, I feel like I gotta jam all this in? You know, my understanding is this is the one life I get. And so I've got to like wring out all the living that I can do while I'm able, because clock's ticking. So there's a little bit of that morbidity. And then on the happier level, I love language, man. So I love talking to people. I love listening to people, like two people who can really put some spin on words, who are quick, who are witty, who can use language in unexpected ways and like pull out a metaphor you didn't see coming and T-bone you with it. I love that. I love reading that, hearing that. I love people freaking it in songs. I like monologues. So almost anything that has to do with language, I'm eager to try my hand at. Yeah.
If I was correctly, you were on the West Coast doing quite a few shows there. And now you're doing some back in the Midwest. What is it? You know, obviously you're from Minneapolis. I mean, what does it mean to be back in the Midwest performing again?
Oh, interesting. Yeah. So I grew up in Minneapolis. And I split my time now between Minneapolis and New York. And I do think that, man, each region has its charms and its flaws, as we all do, right? Like, I think the Midwest has like a way, way richer musical and artistic scene than a lot of people on the coast think. Culinary, too, I would say. Like, I just think we're better at art and culture than we get credit for. We do some cool stuff, and the kind of stuff that we do tends to be made in slightly more isolation than like the industry forces. So when I say that, I mean like, you know, when I was working super heavy with Doomtree, we weren't submitting our mixes to a record executive to see how it fit into the market, right? We were just like, what if you put a horn on it? You're making it up. You're making it up as you go. And so you get some weird stuff. You know, that's cool. It doesn't sound like all the coastal stuff or like copycat. I like that. On the other hand, I do sometimes think that the Midwest is too eager to tell somebody with big dreams that they're too big for their britches. Naked ambition that hurts people, that sucks. Naked ambition that's willing to try and fail in the interest of reaching big heights, I think that's cool. I don't want to bat somebody down. I want to, like, you know, ideally, if it's your very best, like, you take a knee and lace your fingers and for a foothold, or you applaud them on the rise and say, hey, I don't know how likely it is, but I hope you make it.
And for your upcoming show at Project North here, I mean, so I know my only other reference for you, sorry, is at Big Top Chautauqua, where I know you had a couple other musicians on the stage with you. Is that going to be kind of a similar vibe for Project North here too, or?
Yeah, I get to share this stage with a couple of super talented musicians who I think have really changed the way that I feel on stage. You know, you mentioned the kind of like fun attitude. I think, yeah, like any place, I used to work at Dairy Queen. And when you work with somebody who's like hilarious and fun and goofy, the shift is fun and goofy. And when you work with somebody who sucks, the shift sucks, you're making the same ice cream cones. You know what I mean? And I think that the the energy that my two bandmates bring on stage makes the whole thing more fun. It's always been meaningful and felt purposeful and cool and exciting. And this particular iteration of collaborators feels fun. So I've got like a harpist on stage with this killer voice. Her name is Aviva J. And then on the other side of me is this keyboardist and rapper and saxophone player named Joshua Williams, who is like a pretty infectious onstage energy.
Visit projectnorth.org for more information about the festival this weekend. You can find Dess's music on Spotify and YouTube. We also have links to her work at wxpr.org. Just look for the Off the Record podcast.